So yeah, that's my title, and I was going to do a history of collage, which was too ambitious. I had surgery a couple of weeks ago, so I've taken a portion of one of my doctoral essays, which is looking at the Australian versions or anti-versions of Mallarmé's poem Uncoup d'Etat, which is a 20,000 plus word essay, and I've just taken the Chris Edwards section. I've rewritten it to suit, hopefully, this conference on some level. There's a little epigraph just to kind of... I guess I'm putting that up there because I mentioned Mallarmé's notion of the pure work or pure literature a couple of times without really defining it. That could be a kind of loose definition, I guess, from the man himself or the words of his mouth. And then my new abstract, which I'll just read out as the introduction... Maintaining the visual form on the page of Mallarmé's proto-visual late Symboliste poem, Edwards's A Fluke, a mistranslation of Mallarmé's Un coup d'etat, is a clever and ludic mimicry that parodies Mallarmé's notion of pure literature at the same time as achieving a kind of pure literature, rustling and mucking about in the gutter of the double-page spread and in the gulf between itself and Un coup d'etat. This paper will play on Edwards's paronomastic techniques in homophonic transliteration and, via Kristeva's theory of the abject, will expose how mistranslation can take the exemplary poem and over-exemplify it, bend it over, queer it to the point where historical dichotomies of sign and signified, subject and object, exemplary and non-exemplary, if you can call that a dichotomy, break down, and it might even leave you wondering whose poem actually came first and whether the master of rolling the dice is, in fact, Edwards, not Mallarmé. So, silly stuff, and here we go. Un coup d'etat by Stephen Mallarmé. That exemplary gnomic poem of the late 19th century, which arguably kicked off modernism, it has been argued by many people, that proto-visual poem full of esoteric symbolism and disjointed syntax, that broke fully the French Alexandrine's back, exploding from the left margin across the page and across the gutters of 11 double-page spreads, that being the first of them, in scattered fragments like disjecta membra, visual, musical, collage-like, and typographically diverse. Looks like many things on the page. Rocks emerging from the white foam of the sea. Ash on the table to be swished about by some diviner. A mobile hung across a child's crib. Threads or strings blown in the wind. And constellations in the night sky. So that's just the whole poem I've scrolled through there. There are actually two representations of the Big Dipper, or the plough as it's known in the UK, within the shapes of the poem. Its full title, Un coup d'etat, jamais n'abolira hasard, le hasard, a throw of the dice will never abolish chance, perhaps a serious interpretation of probability, describes the event of the poem, and like dice, its words leap through the double page spreads in corresponding large and capitalized typeface. Every fragment of the poem that falls around this title, thrown across the sea of pages in variously sized typeface, unravels and overlays in what Alain Badiou describes as a stupefying series of metaphorical translations around the theme of the undecidable. Or, as Mallarmé dubs it in his preface, prismatic subdivisions of the idea. Within these subdivisions, fragmented images surface as remnants of some lost-at-sea narrative, wavering, oscillating, vibrating throughout. The master of a vessel standing at the bottom of a shipwreck, his fist holding the dice shaking eternally at the stars, the lurching ship, a feather hovering above the abyss, the proposed rolling of the dice between possible outcomes, all thought amidst a throw of the dice, to quote the last line, yet a throw of the dice will never abolish chance, a decisive act with a result determined by ever greater and obscure forces. Jacques Derrida describes Mallarmé's poetics as and or, citing Mallarmé's deft use of homonyms and puns and their chain-like linkages across his oeuvre, not as a crisis, remember Mallarmé's book of criticism, Cri de Verre, but as the key to his poetics' understanding and to new possibilities for literature. And this is Derrida. Let us not forget that these chains, which are infinitely vaster, more powerful and intertwined than is even possible to hint at here, are as if without support, always suspended. It is the Mallarmean doctrine of suggestion, of undecided illusion, such indecision which enables them to move alone and without end, cuts them off, in spite of appearances, from all meaning and from all reference, etc., which leads to numerous traps for criticism and numerous new procedures and categories to be invented. let's leap the 20th century. In 2006, after many artistic ruptures, revolutions, and invented categories and conceptions of the 20th century, Mallarmé's chains and prismatic subdivisions got inverted by down-under poet Chris Edwards in his Fluke, a mistranslation of Mallarmé's Un coup d'etat. Edwards, a collagist who knows all too well the connotations of that descriptor, the French verb coller means to paste, stick, glue, while collage is French slang for an illicit sexual union, he took to Un coup d'etat with a willy-nilly mishmash of approaches. Note the self-consciously silly and phallic double entendre, or more technically, he translated it with a variety of transformational logics, including homophony, paranomasia, litotes, or light, I don't know how to pronounce that, malapropism, mimicry, metonymy, and translation. Yet he sticks to many of Mallarmé's poetic principles, as he says, at the heart of things, at the heart of the poem, at the heart of the idea with its double proposition, is division. According to Mallarmé, the gap, the fold, or more famously, the abyss. The unit of composition in Un coup d'etat is not the line or even the page, but the double page spread. And the abyss is physically embodied in the fold or gutter dead centre. It's a place the eye can't quite see into, full of stapling, stitching, and gluing. Maintaining the visual form on the page of Mallarmé's poem, Edwards as a Fluke, is a clever and ludic mimicry that, as I've said, parodies Mallarmé's notion of pure literature at the same time as achieving a kind of literature and gives it the finger pure literature, and gives it the finger comme ça, rustling about in the gutter of the double page spread and in the gulf between itself and Un coup d'etat. Edwards again. Mallarmé's notorious difficulty, his untranslatability, figured, for example, in the abyss between the English translations I relied on for the sense of his poems and the mutant music I could hear in the French, inspired a Fluke, my mistranslation of Un coup d'etat, which it only now occurs to me was an attempt at pure literature, marred perhaps inevitably by its own impure thoughts. One can only remain philosophical about it. Edwards' philosophy of impure thoughts demonstrates an abject revelry in the collapsing of signifier and signified. According to Julia Kristeva, the abject refers to the human reaction, such as horror, spasms, nausea, to a threatened breakdown in meaning caused by the loss of a distinction between subject and object, between self and other. A corpse, traumatically reminding us of our own materiality, is a prime example of what causes such a reaction. Other things, however, can draw the same reaction. Blood, shit, sewage, even the skin that forms on the surface of warm milk. Incidentally, or dentally, Derrida compares Mallarmé's method of writing and the form it took to the careful cutting up and relocating of body parts. Mallarmé knew that his operation on the word was also the dissection of a corpse, of a decomposable body, each part of which could be of use elsewhere. He then quotes Mallarmé from Les Mottes Anglaises, related to the whole of nature, and in this way coming closer to the organism that possesses life, the word presents itself in its vowels and its diphthongs like a piece of flesh, and in its consonants like a skeletal structure difficult to dissect. And this might be how Edwards sees Un coup d'etat, and a poem more broadly, as a body to dissect into its many parts, or in other words, as an abject provocation. Yes. Kristeva's notion of the abject is in direct contrast to Lacan's object of desire, his objet petit A. The object petit A allows the subject to coordinate his or her desires, maintaining the symbolic order of meaning and intersubjectivity, whereas the abject is radically excluded and rather, as Kristeva writes, draws me toward the place where meaning collapses. Our reaction to such abject material recharges what is essentially a prelingual response in us. As in true theatre, without makeup or masks, refuse and corpses show me what I am permanently thrust aside in order to live. Edwards lifts the already dismembered body parts of Mallarmé's poem from the gutters of the past and re-enlivens them, dramatises them in new gutters for new readers. His blatant gay erotic imagery, his abject subjectivity, is also designed to shock those readers expecting a straight translation, perhaps showing them what they have thrust aside. Where the French Un coup d'etat has, this is just a fragment of one page, I'm going to read the English. This blank rigidity derides in opposition to the ceiling, tramp, porn palmer, exegetical cock-up, prince amid sewage, Your hairdo may well be considered heroic, O irresistible makeover, passed by rational virility, fondler. So there you go. To quote Kate Fagan, in an exemplary queering of his own text, Edwards performs a drama of progenitorship by robbing a fluke of stable lines while reinstating its sameness as a fair copy. Note the quotation marks around sameness because, of course, it's not a like-for-like French-English translation, semantically, and rather a corpse brought back to life, a prince amid sewage, an exegetical cock-up. In Edwards's hands, fingers, or ears, Mallarmé's full title, Un coup de dé, jamais n'abolir le hasard, is broken down, contorted, and reassembled into a fluke. Never. Noble liar. Biohazard. The brackets around the N are to cover both meanings of jamais at once, never and ever, also allowing for an echo of the never-never, that Australian settler version of the abyss, or void, the outback. Edwards explains his choice of title as the remains of a quarrel. It reminded me of the quarrel that broke out in me between various possible mistranslations at every turn of phrase. The third wheel to this quarrel is Plato, his old quarrel between poetry and philosophy, and his description of the noble lie, as in a politician's untruth. Edwards's fluke, I'll go back to that there. Edwards's fluke, an unexpected piece of good luck, speaks to Mallarmé's prismatic subdivisions of the idea that a throw of the dice will never abolish chance. The noble liar speaks to Edwards's misreadings, and biohazard of his misrenderings. As in Mallarmé, all of Edwards's fragments that fall around the title to form the poem are deduced from the flukes laid out in the title. A fluke, incidentally, can also be a parasite, a flatfish, the triangular bits of an anchor, and anything resembling that shape, like barbs on a harpoon or the tail of a whale. And of course, un coup de dé sort of is happening in the ocean, blah, blah, blah. These connecting flukes are Mallarmean chains, but Edwards isn't creating knockoff fake jewellery made of flukes, however much Mallarmé's La Dernière Mode might have something to say about the connection between fashion and poetry. Edwards's chains are the stuff of chaos. According to Edwards, in writing A Fluke, he was guided mainly by what he calls in his homophonically mistranslated preface, the latent conductor unreasoning verisimilitude imposes on the text. In Mallarmé's preface, it's a fil conducteur latent, meaning, I guess, latent guiding thread, which alludes to, presently in Mallarmé's case, the strange attractors of string theory or chaos theory, a scientific theory that emerged in the late 20th century. Strange attractors make an interesting theory for mistranslation, as Edwards writes. An attractor is the state into which a system will eventually settle. The black holes around which galaxies cluster are examples of attractors. Cultural attractors include chiefs, tribes, states, and anything that gives us identity, like religion, class, and worldview. Strange attractors are a special class. They live in phase space, a multidimensional imaginary space in which numbers can be turned into pictures. Fractal objects, they consist of infinite numbers of curves, surfaces, or manifolds, and as their name suggests, they draw things toward them. So that's the Lorenz attractor. So here, mistranslation is a gathering together of multiple swerving atoms or objects. Think of Lucretius's Kleinemann, objects that become interchangeable by dint of their correlations and correspondences, which brings to mind, strangely enough, a correlation for me, Georges Bataille's story of the eye, an erotic novel that is really the story of an object, a composition that should be called a poem, as per Roland Barthes. The initial object of attraction in the erotic narrative is the eye, but then other globular objects become variously and erotically interchangeable in both form and content. An egg, in French, egg is œuf, and eye is œil. Disc-shaped objects like a saucer of milk become associated with the eye and these eggs and stuff, and then, of course, testicles. A secondary metaphorical chain concatenates from these, made up of all the avatars of liquid, so tears, milk in the cat's saucer, eye, the yolk of a soft-boiled egg, sperm, and urine. At the climax of this erotic tale, even the sun comes to stand in for the eye as a urinary liquefaction of the sky, drawing together the eye-egg-testicle metaphor in this massive climax, so to speak. Accumulated image associations form an epic cataract in both senses of the word. And here's a quote from Barthes. By virtue of their metonymic freedom, they endlessly exchange meanings and usages in such a way that breaking eggs in a bathtub, swallowing or peeling eggs, soft-boiled, cutting up or putting out an eye or using one in sex play, associating a source of milk with a cunt or a beam of light with a jet of urine, biting the bull's testicle like an egg or inserting it in the body, all these associations are at the same time identical and other. For the metaphor that varies them exhibits a controlled difference between them that the metonymy that interchanges them immediately sets about demolishing. The world becomes blurred. Properties are no longer separate. Spilling, sobbing, urinating, ejaculating form a wavy meaning, and the whole of story of the eye signifies in the manner of a vibration. I hope this goes some way to explaining how I think a homophonic translation, and sometimes just poems in general, can work as a system of attraction, of wavering objects, where the poem, what have I written here, is not just an object but many correlated objects oscillating, where word images, word associations like the ones I've mentioned above become interchangeable. A poem in which any one of these objects could equal another, object equals desire equals fetish equals dream, for instance. A similar compositional approach occurs in terms of the imagery used in Bataille's Solar Anus, which Edwards quotes from in his epigraph, and I may return to that. But let's look back to the flukes of a fluke in which Edwards' word images vibrate alongside and askew from Mallarmé's. Here's the final double page spread of these fractal objects. Imagine the gutter, of course, down the middle of these spreads. So that's the French, and then that's things. I'm going to try and go into a few of these lines in a bit more depth now, not reading the whole thing out loud. But we can read and misread many notions in Edwards's flukes here, but I want to concentrate on some of the more Australian nuggets in the language for a moment. So here we've got, except for the attitude, maybe his Aussie loins proved quaintly adroit, once fused with the wrecked and disorderly. So Edwards uses the more colloquial maybe instead of perhaps, turns altitude into attitude and Aussie loin into Aussie loins. Now, considering the literary meaning for loins, the region of the sexual organs regarded as the source of erotic or procreative power, we can read into this as saying that perhaps besides the attitude, i.e. Mallarmé's highfalutinous, Mallarmé's literature, his sexual organ, hangs, much like the shape of the poetry on the page, a little to the right, as the Australian saying goes, and it was only right, as in adroit, not politically to the right, once it had fused with the eros and rex caused by its intertextual relations with Edwards. Further down the page, zooming in on the lines, veiled, doubting, roly-poly, brilliantined, emetic, I want to see Rita of the collapsible derriere, oh sacred. Rita here and her strangely attractive derriere, perhaps a half-pon and derrida, in causing this shiny vomit of a poem to omit from Edwards, surely come to represent the promiscuity of the pun and its ability to collapse the sign and signified. To end the poem, Edwards mistranslates tout pensée émet d'un coup de dé, all thought emits a throw of the dice, into tout paid enemy, little mate, I guess you want the code word, eh? Where Mallarmé rounds out his poem almost neatly with his openly enigmatic and existential poetic statement on how each thought emits a ripple into the universe, perhaps, affecting the course of history, blah, blah, blah. Edwards plays the parodist, the joker, the devil's advocate by presuming that the reader will want to find the code word in the final line of his poem, as if with a code word they might be able to solve the poem, as many have tried to do with Un coup de dé. It's a sly comment, I guess, on how gnomic Mallarmé is, can be, and how gnomic poetry can come to seem to readers who seek singular or straight meanings in poetry and in the world. Edwards' conclusion is also a bizarrely prescient comment on the future gnomic leader of the free world, that toupeed enemy who may want the code word for nuclear weapons sometime soon. After all, Australia's little mate, when it comes to political and military tithe and, dare I say, expediency, has for a long time been the POTUS. Speaking of prescience, the phrase se sere, it would be, is translated by Edwards into pig Spanish, que sera. Que sera, sera, what will be, is an exclamation used to convey a fatalistic recognition that future events may be out of the speaker's control. Could a roll of the dice never abolish its chance be a long, drawn-out analogy for this sentiment or just a premonition of the poem's future upending? Edwards plays cleverly on the reader's proclivity to read sexual puns into the text. His deliberate paronomastic tactics of lapsus and misreading mean that words he has not mistranslated can just as easily be misread by the reader. Take the above fragment. To have the vagueness of the spirit, not to mention the self, jettisoned is often Edwards's prerogative in his poems, I'd argue, but his queer and deliberate inappropriation of the high-minded language of Mallarmé, his sexualising of its content, his use of litotes to downplay his attentions but emphasise play with another, also allowed this reader to see spirit self-jettisoned as spurt self-jettisoned accidentally. Reading a fluke alongside Un coup de day, its veiled inversions at a juncture whose supremacy is probably celluloid, old puerile shadow, at some point they begin to merge into each other's shadows and superimpose. The homophonic verisimilitude reaches a point where it appears that Mallarmé is in fact translating the sense Edwards makes. For instance, and this is Mallarmé, as if, translated by Weinberger, as if an insinuation simple in the silence, enrolled with irony or the mystery, hurled, howled in some nearby whirlpool of hilarity and horror, perhaps Australia, flutters above the abyss. In other words, who is haunting whom here? So while an imitator like Edwards would acknowledge his debts to this proto-modernist poem, to all his Freudian slips, and indeed to Freud's famous line, "Everywhere there are signs that a poet has been here before me," Edwards's mistranslation also recalled pre-18th century attitudes towards originality, or what was called creative imitation, whereby the imitation and strategic revision of prior authors was a kind of filial rejection with respect. Moreover, move over, as Northrop Frye jokes in his Anatomy of Criticism, or joked, published the year after Edwards's birth, 1957, any serious study of literature soon shows that the real difference between the original and the imitative poet is simply that the former is more profoundly imitative. And this is where I finally get to mention that the etymological roots of the word exemplary are in the late 16th century Latin word exemplum, which means sample or imitation. I could also offer up a plumbing pun here, but I think Edwards's A Fluke is doing enough plumbing of the past on its own. I'd finally like to argue that this exemplary poem squared, this dance of paragons, is both symptomatic and representative, I guess, of the age of the internet, if I can still call it that, in which fake news is real news, is cut and pasted, is translated into your browser, an age in which wowsers and identity politics are at fever pitch, an age in which the problems of authorship and originality are arguably more global and intense than ever, because the mediums and media in and through which we write have expanded so rapidly. And I'm thinking here of the sort of parallels in exponentiality between sort of capitalism and the proliferation of language online through sort of coding and hypertext and computer-generated text. I don't quite know how to draw them together, but I feel like there's some kind of this sort of explosion creates a new kind of crisis for verse or poetry on some level. So, and from this, I would say then that A Fluke is fused with the wrecked and disorderly, whore of the internet's quantified signal, engendering saloon tales, obliquities, and declivities on fire, while at the same time, A Fluke is also attempting to interrogate the real, so dissolute. Mallarmé is awkward in the original. His doubts and nagging susurrations justify the crime of Edwards's jokey translation. All of Mallarmé's and Edwards's parallelized neutralities identify as the gaff, or the gap between subject and object, sign and signified, sense and nonsense, truth and untruth in a post-truth world. Maybe the last word on Edwards's mistranslation is the first word, as in Edwards's epigraph from Bataille's Solar Anus. It is clear that the world is purely parodic, in other words, that each thing seen is the parody of another, or the same thing in a deceptive form. Thanks.